Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. And back in Studio A with my guest this morning, as I mentioned, from the San Juan County Partnership, talking about the LEAD program, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. LEAD program manager Jeannie Wright is here this morning. Good morning and welcome to KSJE.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Also, Paula Jackson is here. She's a case manager with the LEAD program. And Paula, good morning to you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to see both of you this morning and to talk a little bit about this LEAD program. And so, Jeannie, talk to me a little bit about the concept of this program. This is an idea to maybe keep folks maybe out of the detention center and out of jail.
Yes.
Is that kind of the bottom line? Is that kind of what it's hoping for?
It is LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion.
Right.
And what we do is we work closely with the crisis intervention team, with Farmington Police Department and the county mental health officers to address individuals that have substance use, mental health, and frequent police interaction to get them intense case management to hopefully reduce the cycle of incarceration.
Got you. And so these folks come to your attention through their law enforcement interactions, I guess, right? But instead of sending them to maybe jail, they come to you.
Correct. So instead of the frequent stays in jail,
right,
we connect them with a case manager that will address some of the problems, such as getting them housing, getting them on medication, addressing some of the deeper issues.
Got you. And that's where Paula comes in a little bit, right? Because
yes.
Paula, you are one of the case managers, the LEAD case manager for the LEAD program. And so when folks come to you, is housing kind of the most pressing need for many of these clients that are coming to you?
Majority of them, I would say at least 80% of them are homeless. And fortunately, we work with San Juan Partners that has a housing program. Housing, it's hard to set up people with their support system or get them, you know, where they need to be on their medication or, in some type of rehab or anything if we don't have housing. So that's our main goal. We can get them in their individual housing or we have the PATH, the people assisting the homeless here.
The shelter, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's our main thing, is we can maybe get them into the PATH and then get them into long-term housing of their own.
Right, understood. But that sounds like it's got to be one of the first steps, if not the first step, right, to eliminate some of these other influences in their lives. If they don't have a stable place to stay every night, that can cause other problems as well, I would think.
Yes, and that's our main goal, is to get them in a safe place.
Right.
It's hard to focus on anything if you don't have a safe place to lay your head.
Right, very true. And Jeannie, you and I were talking before we came on the air too a little bit about that goal of finding a stable place for folks to be and then kind of working on some of the other things that's impacting them or causing them to abuse substances or whatever the case may be that keeps getting them involved with law enforcement. But this is kind of the path forward, I guess, for a lot of these folks, having a stable place to live.
Correct.
Yeah.
So once we have them in a stable place, they're able to get sleep, they're able to stabilize, and we help them get to medical appointments, get on medication to address the mental health issues, counseling if they need it. We'll set them up with services within the county. Really, we just help them stabilize, because getting them housing is the easy part. Keeping them housed is difficult. A lot of these people they don't know how to pay rent. They don't know how to be in an apartment. They may have never done it. So we help them step by step through the process to ensure that the stability continues.
Right. And again, take me through the steps of how these folks get to you. They've had an interaction with law enforcement, but instead of sentencing them or sending them to jail, they call you or somebody calls you?
So we have a great relationship with law enforcement in this county. And what they do is we will try to do a warm handoff where we go with law enforcement. We meet to these individuals. We explain the program and give them an alternative. Say, we are willing to help you to prevent law enforcement from continuing to be in your life. Because we realize that the cycle of going in and out of jail is just not really helping them. And so we're trying to reduce that and address some of the problems.
Right. And we talked a lot about the term breaking the cycle, right? And I guess that's also part of what you are trying to do, both of you, with this program, is to break that cycle of, you know, someone's abusing and then they get arrested and then they go back, get out, go abuse again and get rearrested. And I mean, that seems to be a cycle for a lot of folks these days.
Definitely. And we do understand a lot of the individuals do go to jail. And if that happens, we work really closely to make sure that we're there when they get out of jail to get them to where they need to be. We make sure that if they're on probation, we get them to their probation appointments. And so we are trying to prevent frequent arrests.
Right. And to be clear, these folks aren't violent offenders. Those folks are not eligible for this program. Isn't that true?
Correct. So we do have a criteria that law enforcement knows that there are some people that do not qualify for our program. These are low offending individuals that it's just frequent police interaction, but not extreme offenses.
Right. Right. And the judges also help, and the prosecutors too, with this program of sending folks or supporting folks who come through your program, correct?
Yes. So the majority of our clients that are in the court system are in competency court. And so we work very closely with that district attorney and the judge and to know that we are helping these individuals.
Right. And Paula, I want to come back to you and ask you a question about the cases that you deal with. I know we can't talk about specific cases, but about how long would you say you work with these individuals? I imagine it's a longer term. It's not necessarily 5 days or so. I mean, this is a long process to try to help folks through an addiction or abuse problem, correct?
Yes. I work with people until they feel that they're safe and they have feel that they have their mental illness under control, have their support systems back. Our main goal is, say, housing. Once we get them into housing, if they do need a caregiver, we want to work with the MCO to get them a caregiver. We want to make sure they're going to their doctor's appointments and understand what the doctor needs, because we take care of their medical issues, just like their psychiatric issues, their dental issues. Their, you know, if they need to go to the eye doctor, whatever their needs are to make them feel safe and supported.
Mm-hmm.
You can work with the individual, because unfortunately schizophrenia doesn't go away. You just learn to cope with it. We could work with them from 18 to 55, you know, however long they need that support. What happens in the beginning, we support them, you know, say most like we support them 3 times a week. Then as they go and they start getting better and learn coping skills, then we're going to support them only once a week. So it's mostly about not serving them. It's about serving them less.
Right.
Or helping them less.
Sure. And I guess maybe eventually it might be once every 2 weeks or mm-hmm. once a month, maybe, if they're doing pretty well. But to know that they have that ongoing support probably is really helpful for a lot of these individuals.
Yes.
To know that they can call you and update you, or that you're going to check up on them and
yes.
see how they're doing, kind of thing. So that's important. And of course, every case is different, and so it's probably hard to predict how long they'll be needing your services, 5 days a week or whatever, until it happens and they don't anymore.
Right.
So I would think so.
Everyone's different.
Right. Very true. Very true. And you both are now with the San Juan County Partnership. This lead program has been taken over by the San Juan County Partnership for the last, how long has it been? Janie, remind me.
Since July of this year.
Just a couple of months.
Yeah.
But the lead program has been in San Juan County for a couple of years, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, we started, I was with Angel Peak Counseling.
Right.
And we received, it was called the COSAP grant through the federal government. And we had that for a year from July 23rd of 22 to July, then it went to the state.
Right.
Then we went to San Juan Partners.
Gotcha. And that's where your funding is coming from, pretty much, is from a state, from grants, or the partnership is helping with that?
Yes. So the lead program is funded by a state grant at this point.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Very good. And again, by doing this, by diverting these folks from jail and helping them, the other goal I would say too is to reduce crime, right? Because maybe if they are not addicted to these substances, they're not looking to rob things or steal things or what have you. Isn't that part of the overall vision of this program?
Correct. And that is why we see a lot of the lower level crimes, such as shoplifting, because they don't have any way of getting food, making trouble, like loitering, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. The lower level things, it's really not hurting anybody, but it's getting them constantly arrested. If they have a stable place and they're stable on their medications, they're not doing that as often. They're not trying to survive.
Right. Yeah. And that changes a lot of things about those individuals, I guess, right? They're not looking for their next food or wherever they're going to, or drugs or whatever they need or think they need.
Yes. So when they're not in survival mode, we tend to see that mental health stabilizes. And that is often why they're using substances as self-medicating, because of the mental health. And so once we get them stable, we notice a lot of things get better.
Right. And that's an important thing. And I think maybe for a lot of folks who maybe don't have that, haven't dealt with that, or maybe don't know anyone who's maybe been through that, it's hard for folks to think about someone living in that way, that survival mode, because a lot of us are just not used to that or not aware of it as much as you folks are, because you work with it every day.
Yes.
So that's important.
Yeah. And sometimes it is just basic needs, like mm-hmm. drinking water, or they need a meal. And that's a lot of what we do in the very beginning, which helps build the rapport with them, that they know we're there to help them.
Right. And I was surprised this morning before we came on the air when you were telling me that, you know, if someone doesn't have a stable place to live, you know, maybe they're not carrying, if they're out on the streets or they're homeless, they're not maybe carrying their medication with them because they don't want to get stolen, they don't want to get robbed, things like that when they're on the streets. And so now they're not taking their medication, so that compounds maybe some of the issues that they are dealing with. In addition to being homeless, now they don't have their mental health medication or other stuff, right?
Correct. So talking to a lot of our clients, we're realizing that out of safety, they don't carry their medications on the street, and so they don't keep them. They're not able to keep a lot of things that we would take for granted because it's stolen or they're beaten up for it. And so really they have pretty much nothing
right.
on the streets.
And that goes back to that survival mode, I guess, of I don't have my stuff, so I need to take it or find it somewhere else or take somebody else's stuff.
Correct. Yeah. And so oftentimes when we start working with them, like to get them housing, we're starting from square one, getting them their birth certificate, getting social security cards, all the documents that we would be able to find in a file cabinet. They don't have that because they can't carry it on the street with them.
Right. So that is a challenge, I know, because there's bureaucracy in everything, it seems, when you're trying to recreate some of those documents or gather them for these folks or anybody. If I needed a new social security card, it would take me, I don't know, I didn't want to think about it.
Correct.
How long it would take me to figure out how to get it, and then B, getting it. So,
yep.
And that's, someone that has some resources to be able to do that. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I want to ask you both a little bit about success stories, because I know you both have been at this for a little bit of time, and I imagine it's nice to see someone turn that corner and really, you know, start to become maybe a more productive member of society or a very productive member of society. And Paula, can you share a story with us?
I have many stories.
Yeah.
I will say when I worked at PMS, I worked in the treatment court program, and I know that there's at least three participants that are now peer support and actively working in the community at Cottonwood, at Value Options, and at the Wellness Center. So those three individuals went from treatment court on the street to productive working. There's a wonderful thing called peer support here in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your, and I'm going to say it wrong, CSW, I'm going to say it wrong. When you become a peer support, that is kind of what everyone's looking for. It's because when you go out onto a crisis, you want to have peer support with you because that person can say, hey, I've been where you are, and give them like kind of the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. So these are individuals that have gone through what we're describing this mm-hmm. morning and then have wanted to get a job or be in a position where they can help other individuals that are in a place where they
yes.
once were themselves.
Yes.
And I would think for those folks that are suffering a crisis or what have you, it really is maybe helpful to hear a peer talk about, you know, I've been there, done that, than somebody else kind of preaching, you know, of what they should be doing that maybe doesn't know what they experience day in, day out.
When you're talking to somebody that's on the street and they're struggling, they like to hear somebody say, hey, I've been where you were.
And right.
So that right there, automatically you build that rapport, and then you're able to, you know, continue to build that trust and bring supports in for them. And
understood. Very good. And Jeannie, right, any success stories that you can share with us this morning from your work as well?
I think to tie it in on that with the peer support,
yeah.
We also work a lot with the families. And so because we have seen so many success stories and so many people get better, we are able to talk to maybe the parents or the relatives and say, we've seen this and we know how hard it is that they are where they are, but you're not alone and things can get better. And so I think that helps the family unit to know they're not alone, because this is scary. We deal with mental health every day. The mom in the situation may have only dealt with her son having schizophrenia or some mental health issue. And so we're able to really rally the parents and be a support.
Right. And for many of these folks, I mean, do maybe their parents kind of, I don't want to use the word give up, but do they just get frustrated maybe because they've been there so many times to help and help get them maybe back on their feet, that after a while they're glad that maybe someone like you, an outside person, is helping and then can be that maybe third party to kind of tell the family what to expect or how things are going?
Definitely. Because they feel alone when they're doing it all by themselves, that there's no hope because what they've tried isn't working. And when we come in and say, you're not alone, this is normal for this diagnosis.
Right.
And to normalize it is helpful for them. And it is helpful for them to say, okay, he's not listening to me today. Can you maybe talk to him? And sometimes getting it from an outside perspective helps a little bit.
Right. And do some of these family relationships maybe regroup after a time, maybe that's been damaged over the years of abuse or whatever, and then there's frustrations, and as the family can maybe see someone getting healthier, getting better, maybe making better choices, those bonds maybe start to regrow?
Yes.
Go ahead.
There is a program here in San Juan County called NAMI, yes. National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and we like to set the families up for a support there so that they're with other parents that have children that with a mental health issue, or peer-to-peer, so it could be somebody that is on their medication, housed, and needs support with learning about their own mental health issues. Education is the biggest piece, you know, educating the parents, educating the police officers, educating, you know, a spouse, children, you know, children have schizophrenic parents, so it's mostly education and support.
Right. Very, very true. Very important. But it sounds like to me that you all and the community has done a pretty good job of getting law enforcement kind of on the same page. I think there's been a lot of new training for law enforcement to be able to identify folks that are in maybe a crisis situation when they encounter them on the streets or whatever the case may be, to be able to maybe call folks like yourselves or others to maybe intervene. And so they're not being taken off to jail perhaps right away. And they give you a chance to evaluate these people and see if they're a fit for this program. Is that kind of how it works?
Definitely. We have a great relationship with law enforcement here. And so the way it works is it may not always be the crisis intervention team that interacts with these people, but when the police officer recognizes, you know, there's mental health or substance use and we're seeing a pattern, then they can connect the crisis intervention team, who then connects with us.
Got it.
And so we're able to recognize the individuals who need the program, and the law enforcement are the first responders in the situation. And so they definitely keep us busy, but I think it's good. And
right.
They work really well with our clients. They understand it. They're able to empathize with these people and have a lot of ways of kind of calming them down when they're in crisis situations.
Right. And the other part of this program, I guess, for taxpayers would be it saves a lot of money if you're not sending these folks to the detention center. Just because they have a mental health issue or maybe some substance abuse issues, this is diverting them from that really expensive place to get help that they need to then maybe try to turn things around in a less expensive way.
Definitely. So there are a lot of statistics on how much money this saves the community. When you think about law enforcement is involved, the ER may be involved if they're in crisis for mental health, the jails, the lawyers, everybody. It costs money. It costs
right.
a lot of money. So if we can get case managers involved, it's much cheaper for the community because all that other things are not involved and it's not continual. So every time they go to jail, it costs the community money.
Right. And the outcomes are better, ideally.
Definitely.
For these folks, right? I mean, that's the whole idea, is to break that cycle.
Because we're getting to the deeper issue. We're not just addressing it by putting them in jail for a day, which doesn't work. We are actually saying, okay, why do you keep getting involved in law enforcement? What is causing this? And it's different for everybody.
Right.
And so we are able to actually get down to the deeper root and say, what do you need? Why is this happening?
Right. You mentioned some of the folks that maybe are in this program. Maybe it's a shoplifting situation or whatever that gets them involved with law enforcement. So I'd assume that the retail community should be pretty supportive of what you're doing as well, if it can help break that cycle and get folks help instead of going back to their store and taking more stuff.
Yeah, I would think so. I think the community in general is grateful. We have a lot that their neighborhoods don't exactly appreciate them, you know, if they're going from house to house and
selling things
or causing issues. And so a lot of times the community says, well, nothing's happening. But really, there's a lot going on. We're really trying to work with the individual and get them stabilized. It just takes a little bit of time sometimes.
Right. Very true. Paula, we're just about out of time this morning, but I wanted to come back and ask you just a final thought about, you know, the work that you do and sticking with these folks in the case management again, and whether it's 5 days a week or 1 day a week or once every 2 weeks. I mean, I guess, again, it's really important that they understand that you are there to help them, because breaking this addiction is a long-term process.
Well, the like we were talking about, is when a police officer is on the street with someone, it could be something simple as, hey, I want to go to counseling, but I don't know how to fill out the paperwork. So that's where that intense case management comes in. We help them with the paperwork, and that's what it is. Probably for, you know, their lifetime, they're always going to need that support system for things that we take for granted. Oh, just paperwork. To them, it's overwhelming.
Right.
Or to talking to somebody at the front counter, or, you know, going shopping by themselves. We don't think that would be scary, but with people with mental health issues, that's very, very intimidating for them.
Right. And because of the work of you and the others, that they can get that support, and maybe it's not so intimidating, mm-hmm. As they get used to maybe going through that process.
And they can follow through with the services they need. You know, if they go to the doctor and they don't understand what the front desk lady is saying, they're probably not going to go back to the doctor again. So if we can teach them how to talk to the lady, make that rapport, they're going to go back to the doctor again.
Right. Very true. Very true. Well, thank you both for coming in this morning and talking with me. I guess my final question would be, if there's someone watching us this morning or listening to us on the radio and they say, well, that sounds like, you know, my kid could be helped by that or that program or what have you. It really needs to be a referral from law enforcement, or is there another way to maybe get in touch with all of you in the program that you're doing? Or is it a law enforcement that starts this whole process?
Well, generally our referrals do come from law enforcement, but if people have questions, they are welcome to call us at San Juan County Partnership, and sometimes we can lead them to other resources as well.
Gotcha. Very good. That's important. And so again, the San Juan County Partnership is now organizing the LEAD program here in San Juan County, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. I think big thanks to the police department, the sheriff's office, the judges, the prosecutors, for their support in working with you and your clients to help keep folks out of jail if they're nonviolent offenders, and getting the help that they need. Thank you both for coming in this morning. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. My guest this morning from the San Juan County LEAD program here on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.